Blog Talk Radio.
Monica Liel, welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, December 10th, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, a wonderful and loving community dedicated to the study of the Law of One and related topics. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When done, I'll put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. And please visit our sponsor at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding high vibration, life-changing alkaline antioxidant water. Medically certified in Japan, it's the missing piece to radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. That sponsor website again is waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We'll be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, except Christmas Eve. We will take that night off, but we will be here next Friday and on New Year's Eve as well, every Friday, 9 p.m. Carla, how are you doing today? I heard you
had a
rough trip. Yeah, I heard you had a bit of a rough time last week.
It was really something. It was so funny. Everybody would be laughing if they heard the whole story. But suffice it to say that nothing worked. And the only thing that was good was that we did visit Jim's mom, celebrated her 93rd birthday with her. She liked her present. And all of that was excellent. We got our Christmas cards out. And unfortunately, all the teaching notes that I lovingly created for the teaching that I'm doing this week on Living the Law of One 101, the choice for the International Metaphysical University. I got each chapter's questions just perfectly down, and everything that I was going to talk from, all my notes just perfectly formatted and everything. And then I lost the computer on the way home because I was in a wheelchair. And the fellow that was pushing my wheelchair from one gate to another, I said, "Sir, you're leaving my laptop behind. Could you please go back and get my laptop?" And, you know, he was pushing me and pushing me. And I had no control. And he says, "Oh, someone will get it." He was, I think, Hispanic. And I'm not sure he even understood what I was asking. And he just kept pushing. So when I got to the next gate, which, of course, was two cities away from Chicago, you know how big O'Hare is, I told the person that eventually came to that desk, "I still have a laptop in a carry-on at my previous gate, and I haven't been able to get hold of it yet. I was taken away from it before I could grab it." You know, I'm in a wheelchair. I'm sitting down. I don't really have the ability at this point to stand up in the aisle and hoist the thing down. So it was a matter of getting somebody to do it for me. I could not affect this guy. And so finally, the lady said, "I'm so sorry to hear that you have a lost bag. Let me call on that." So she calls the manager. The manager says, "Gee, I don't know what to do. Do I have time to send it over or do I not?" And she hesitated for about a half an hour. finally she decided to try to send it, but of course by that time it was too late. So thanks to the incompetence of a couple of airline employees, I do not have my computer. I do not know what my appointments are from now on. my life is lost to me. I'm going to have to call and, you know, find out, because I vaguely remember the appointments that I had. And I'll just have to call and get them back, get that information back by telephone. But it was a shame. And, of course, the worst of it was the fact that I'm talking on a different phone, because my normal computer, I can use Skype. It's a strong computer, and it will support that. The computer that I'm using, until I get a new computer or until I get my old good computer back, is the computer I replaced in 2006, and it will not support Skype. So I am on a landline, and, you know, there's no real protection there. But I hope that the sound is all right and everybody can understand me okay. I want everybody to know that although it was a harrowing experience to be uncomfortable for that week, and I certainly was, that I survived it nicely. I'm back home in my lovely mama chair with my lovely bed and my lovely bidet, and I am comfortable and warm and happy and under a cover as I speak to you tonight. So all is well in my little world, and I'm looking at my Christmas tree, and I'm full of Christmas cheer or Hanukkah cheer or Kwanzaa cheer or whatever kind of cheer you want for this time of the year. I think it's a wonderful time of the year.
Gosh, well, I'm sorry to hear that you went through that, but I sure am glad you made it home safely, and at least you're back in your comfortable home. So that's good news. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Carla, we do have a few questions that have been submitted through the bringforth.org website, and the first one is a little bit long, so I'm going to read this through. This is from Scott. And Scott says, "Hi, Carla, Monica, and Gary. I sometimes have the pleasure of dealing with a person who is definitely polarizing towards service to self. He uses his charisma and deception to acquire power, which is fundamentally at odds with the way I view existence. I should also mention that myself and this power-oriented individual have had conflict in the past about his inappropriate use of power. My way of dealing with people that I'm fed up with like this to this point has been to simply ignore them on a personal basis, give them the silent treatment, and when the opportunity arises, to honestly point out their behavior to others. Of course, I have the deeper understanding in my core of the dance between the polarities, and of course that all is well. Yesterday, I came across this transcript from a Kuo session excerpted. The question is, I have a final question. Those that seek the light, is there a way we can protect ourselves from those who seek the darkness? The reply from Kuo, I am Kuo and am aware of your query, my brother. We are most grateful that you have queried in this regard, for there is indeed the means by which any seeker of light might provide itself with a protection from such influence. Though it seems quite a foolish thing to do, the means is to enter within one's own heart, within the state of meditation or prayer, and to find as much heartfelt love as one can generate, and offer it to those who would wish one less than well, and to bathe these entities in this love and in that light, and to offer to them that unconditional love from the heart, which is so sweet and delicate to those of the positive polarity, but which has the opposite effect upon those of the negative polarity. However, we must remind each that it is necessary that the intention for such a protection be not to resist or to cause the entities of negative polarity any discomfort at all, but to simply offer the heartfelt love to each two such entities, and then to bathe the self in the armor of love and light, and to offer this love as often as is necessary in order that the protection and wall of light be constructed about the entity in a pure and heartfelt manner. Thus, the positive and negative poles offer a natural boundary, shall we say, or resistance, each to the other, for a certain portion of time and experience before the unification of those polarities is accomplished within the sixth density illusion, as we spoke previously." End of the excerpt. Getting back to Scott, I feel that if I physically showed some sort of love and acceptance to this power-oriented individual, that I would be enabling him. He needs my acceptance to give him more power because of the position I hold. It's not a workplace situation where people are often stuck kissing up to their bosses. So, to shorten my question, what would Jesus do and be when having to deal with a power and ego-oriented individual in my circumstance on a daily or weekly basis, both in outward physical behavior and thought and feeling? Thanks in advance from Scott.
Okay, well, that's a fairly complex query because there are several levels to the answer. So let me take it layer by layer. One layer of what would Jesus do in a situation like that is Jesus would render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar and render unto the Creator those things that are the Creator's. In other words, if there is some yellow ray duty involved in the relationship with this person, then it would be Jesus' way to respect that and to offer the respect due the man's station. And if there was a job, you said it wasn't a job situation, but if there were an honor duty to perform with this person, to go ahead and perform it as if the guy were a gem. Okay, that's one layer of behavior right there, is just to go ahead and operate according to the functions that are going to be dealt with by the collaboration or interaction between the two of you. Don't let his nastiness keep you from doing your job or your duty or your honor. That's one layer. Another layer is the layer in which you work within yourself to find love at the soul level for another human being. Now, I've got a couple of stories in this regard, and it shows the difference between a person for whom there is hope and a person that for whom there is no hope for a service to others oriented person to relate to. The person that is all kinds of hope is a person that is basically service to others in polarity, but who has troubles that create a situation in which she doesn't know how to act. I had a boss like this when I was very young. I was all of 21 years old, and it was my first professional librarian's position. And I was young to get that. I didn't have my master's degree yet. But I did land a job as the assistant to the librarian at the Speed Scientific School at University of Louisville. It was a plum of a job for somebody as young as I. The pay was lousy, but the position was professional. And I discovered the first day on the job that she was a nightmare boss. She'd never been a boss before. She had started the Speed School Library before I was born. So she's quite a bit older than I. And she was very set in her ways. She'd never had an employee. And so her ideas of how to handle an employee were antiquated and unrealistic and just bizarre, just strange. And I'm being kind. So my first impulse, of course, was to hate her with every fiber of my being because she was giving me a hard time in a number of different ways. And then I thought about it and I realized, you know, I need to keep this job for a year. I don't want to make it worse for myself by riling her or by getting her back up. I just as soon she not know what a lousy boss she is. I need to keep that to myself at this point. And what I decided to do was to act as if I loved her. And I did that. I've written about this, so pardon me, any of you who are listening who have read this story. But it's a powerful one, and there's a point to it. Within the 3 weeks I'd given myself to put this policy into effect, my determination to act as though I loved her opened a place within my heart. And I loved her at the end of that three-week period because understanding poured into me every day that I treated her well about why she was such a mess. You know, why she she had never had any encouragement in her life. She was full of self-doubt. She was full of low self-worth. She had never really been loved. She was a spinster and had never had a successful relationship with anybody. She tried to have friends, but she just was too stiff and starchy for most people, and so she wasn't successful at any of her interactions. And within that three-week period, I came to love her, this poor, gentle soul that had been neglected and abandoned and not abused precisely, but just never loved. And I found myself loving her a lot, and we had a wonderful relationship. She taught me everything she knew about running a library, and that after I'd been there a year, I moved to a job where I was the librarian at a 13th grade school. And I had all of the choices to make myself. I had my own shop. I had my babies to sing to and to read stories to. I had the middle school kids to teach creative writing to. I had the seniors to teach how to use the library for when they went to college. And I had the staff, you know, to pamper by saying, what books do you think the library could use in your area, and what can I do to help your students? And it was just a wonderful transition, and she made it possible. And what made it possible for her to help me was that I was willing to love her. Now, I have another story which indicates that there are some people that are not vulnerable to this tactic. I had a landlord one time, a horrible landlord. He never did anything to the house. It was all written in the contract that he was supposed to do this and this and this. He never did anything that he had agreed to do. And when we tried to sell the house, when we tried to buy the house from him, at the last minute, he upped the price, and Don refused to pay, and then I had to try to get Don's money out of escrow. And the guy was, as far as I could tell, without any feelings whatsoever for anybody else. He was mean. He was petty. He was a hard, hard man. And I knew, because of the fact that this was occurring during the time of the rock contact and I was under constant psychic greeting, that if I separated in my heart from this guy, even for a second, the recriminations upon me would be fierce. I knew that I absolutely could not afford to make any errors at this point. I had to be fastidious. And I went through the whole series of transactions with this man, working as hard as I could to remember who he was on the soul level and to love that soul. And I believe I succeeded because I didn't get any recriminations as far as the psychic greeting went. I can't say that I enjoyed one instant of the exchanges with him because he was being cruel and petty and just as mean as he could possibly be. But I managed to move through a potentially very unpleasant situation with the least possible unpleasantness. I was not able to affect any change as far as our relationship or as far as his feeling my love, but that wasn't the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise was to maintain an open heart and an open energy body, so that I could continue getting the love light energy of the one creator coursing through me and giving me vital energy. Okay, so that's the worst case scenario, is that it's a miserable time that you have any time that you're with this guy, but you just don't separate from him in your heart. If there are any service to others' tendencies in the guy, your private work of loving him at the soul level will undoubtedly be answered by some softening of his techniques toward you. However, it sounds as though it could be that this guy is like the landlord, and there's really no hope, no deviation from the goal of his being a total service to self and manipulating everybody around him for his own good, including you. So, another layer of this, the third layer, is that it is not necessary to indicate in any outward way when you're doing inner work. It is not necessary to act as though you love the guy and thusly enable him. It is only necessary that you love him. And if you can find in your heart that place where you know that he and you are one, then you have a couple things to do. Number one, you need to find the toxicity in your universal character that matches the mirror that he is showing you. The reason it bothers you so much is that you have not completely integrated your shadow side into your waking consciousness. There is a part of you that is like this guy because all things are one. So you have within you the capacity of behaving as boorishly, as rudely, and as selfishly as this service to self person behaves. You need to find that. You need to find it. You need to love it and respect it, understand it, and ask it to work for you. Ask it to work for the light. Because the most negative characteristic has positive shadows. A person that is wanting to manipulate everybody for their own good, is you can change that into writing a good advertisement for your product and knowing how to be persuasive. You can always find a good positive use for the negative characteristics, not that you would murder somebody in a positive way, but that the kind of gumption and nerve and creativity and sheer personal power that it would take to manipulate somebody else or to hurt somebody else can end up being part of your gumption, your strength, your persistence. So ask this part of yourself to work for you, to work for the light, to serve the Creator, and redeem that part of yourself. Then, when you deal with the person, you won't keep being triggered by the fact that you have not yet integrated the part of yourself that he is mirroring to you into your waking personality. It really helps, actually, to have people like this in your life because they give you a real shortcut. They let you know what it is you haven't integrated yet, what in your shadow side you have not wanted to look at. So the worse it is to look at somebody, the more it is important that you look at them, find that toxicity within yourself, go after it, and redeem it. The second thing that you need to do after you've done this inner work of that he's given you to do, of finding that pattern that is in him within yourself and then healing that within yourself, is that once you have done this, you are then able to separate his behavior and his earthly personality from his actual self. He may not know his actual self. He may be the last person in the world to even care who he is. He may be totally consumed by his ambitions and his greed and his determination to control his environment. But for you, who the seeker of truth here and the positive entity who wants to serve positively, you would keep a steady gaze on his soul self, on him at the soul level, because you see, at the soul level, we are all one. And what we are one of is the Creator, who is unconditional love. Now, it's a big jump from somebody that acts as badly as he does to the realization that he is part of the Creator and he is made of unconditional love. But that happens to be the truth. It is often an inconvenient truth when we really want to smash somebody in the face. It's like, we really can't do that because that's the Creator, right? But there's no problem with making a difference in your mind between him as he's behaving and him at the soul level. You're not trying to love a badly behaving boor. You're trying to love your brother as yourself. And this is a powerful, powerful practice. So do not be distracted by the way he acts or the way he is. And do not feel that you have to physically express your love of him. That is not in the equation at all. What the Kuo group was talking about was inner work, where in your inner room of meditation and prayer, you find his soul self and you express to that soul self all the love in your heart. Not judging what he's doing within this incarnation, but staying strictly at the soul level and saying, at this level, I love you as myself, and I wish you very well. That cannot possibly do him any harm. Now, there may be some level at which he picks up these loving thoughts, and they will actually, as the Kuo group said, make him feel icky. It would have the opposite effect on a service to self polarity guy to be loved with that kind of innocence and naivete. But that's the whole point of the exercise, is to inject love into a situation that is, as far as this guy is concerned, going to be unloving and stay unloving. So I think what Jesus would do, he would love the guy. He would not enable the person, but he would see him at the soul level. And it's possible that, you know, if there was some conversation between them, he'd say, there's always hope for you if you wish to turn and repent. You know, there is always a place for you in my kingdom. You have to remember that Matthew was a publican, and tax collectors these days don't really have a great reputation. If somebody works for the IRS as an auditor or something, he's not universally loved. But it's nothing like it used to be in biblical times when taxes were collected by contract. And it was like Matthew got a license to take as much as he could from anybody he could, and he'd give a portion of that to Rome, you see, for taxes, and the rest he could keep for himself. So he was no spring chicken. He was not a sweet man. But Jesus saw something in him that nobody else did. And he wooed him away from what he was doing and gave him responsibilities. And Matthew was an apostle and supposedly wrote one of the Gospels. One of the four Gospels is the Gospel of Matthew. So, you know, he had an excellent latter half of life, serving in a far different way than he had served up until the time that Jesus called him. So there is no question but that Jesus would have seen him at the soul level and would have called him at the soul level. Now, I'm not saying to Scott that he has the responsibility to call this man to service to others. That really is that guy's decision. I am saying that he will go far in resolving the aggravation of the situation so that he's comfortable with this guy. As he loves him, works upon loving him, and works upon finding the toxicity within himself that this guy shows him so clearly, and then healing it within himself. Remember, if you're positively polarized, all your work is on yourself. You don't have judgment for others. You don't try to proselytize. you don't try to change people. You try very hard to understand them. And more than anything else, you try to love them. And if there's anything that you can see to support that's good in them, you can support it. I never tell people to be fakes. I don't tell people to be doormats. I'm always advising people that I counsel that there are times when you have to draw a boundary between yourself and someone else. And for your own psychic comfort, you need to make a boundary there and say, okay, I will not have a personal relationship with this person because there's nothing with which to form one in his activities or his behavior. But I do not separate from him in my heart. I love him as a brother. I see him at the soul level, and he and I are one. And that way, you have made the separation that you need to make, made the boundary that you need to make, so that you are secure in your identity and in your honesty with yourself. And at the same time, you continue to be a positive, loving person that is allowing the energy to flow through the energy body and into the open heart. The great importance of keeping the energy body open and keeping the heart open cannot be overemphasized, because that and that alone is the center of how we graduate from third density, the density of choice, to fourth density, the density of love and understanding.
Okay, Carla, I've got a brief follow-up to that. If the person, say, is not in a position to draw a boundary, they are still having to deal with that other entity on a daily basis, and they are still feeling aggravation or annoyance or judgment towards that other person, the STS-oriented person, then is that an indication that there may still be some aspects in themselves that they need to heal of their own shadow nature?
Well, yes, that's probably the truth. But there's another aspect to that as well. If there is no responsibility that this person, that Scott has towards this person, in other words, if he is in a position of being a boss over this person, or if he is needed by this person so that the person can't simply toy with him at will, there's always the possibility of speaking the truth to power that's in your heart. And I've done this numerous times, not when there was no encouragement, but when I saw an opening. For an opening to exist, for the person to have the right to say something about somebody else, you have to be asked. But so often people will ask something that gives you an opening, and you can speak your truth at that point, not to somebody else about him, but to him. And you can say, you know, I know you're a great guy and you get a lot done, but, you know, the way you do it sometimes really concerns me because, you know, take a look at Joe over here, and Joe was squashed flat as a bug, and you didn't need to do that. And I'm just wondering if you realized that you weren't thinking of others at all in this situation, and I think it would help if you did. Something where you're telling the truth, but your heart is flowing, so that there's a compassion there. And, you know, it's really hard for even the most service-to-self person to resist that completely. With Luther, the landlord, he was able to resist it completely. There was no opening. There was no hope. I'm not saying this is always possible. I'm saying look for the opportunity to speak your truth, not to anybody else about him, but directly to him. And the thing that's necessary when you're doing that is that under no circumstances, for even a second, do you forget that the heart is open, that you are a loving person, and that you are sharing with him for his benefit, for his possible benefit. And you have no attachment to the outcome after you say it. You just let it go. You don't look back behind you to see if he took your advice or anything like that. But I think a little truth goes a long way. And the general reaction that I have from the people around me when they see me do something like that is amazement, because they didn't think it could be done. But if you have enough love in your heart, there are a lot of times you can find the words to share in such a way that the person, for the first time maybe, sees what he's doing. And if he's not totally service to others, you know, consciously, if he's not doing this with attention and with intent, sometimes you can help a person see a new way to behave, a new way to feel. It's always possible.
Okay, thank you, Carla. I'm going to move to the next question. It's a very brief, actually it's more of a comment, from Transitin, saying, Carla, I'd just like to tell you that Mercury is going retrograde, so expect some communication delays, computer problems, etc. Maybe like computers getting lost. But also, old friends and items popping up, maybe like computers getting found. So that's just a comment from Transitin, if you'd like to elaborate on that at all.
Oh, I sure would. I see a lot there to talk about, actually. So Katie, bar the door. Here goes the blah, blah person. Pardon me for my long-windedness, but I suppose it's good for this hour show. Anyway.
Hey, it is your show, Carla. We don't
That's
mind.
That's true. Okay. I will hold forth then. Okay, first of all, about Mercury going retrograde and things being a little chaotic. This is the time in the Mayan calendar between the setting of the fifth sun and the rising of the sixth sun. There is a period of like 30-some years, depending on whether you pay attention to Callahan or Jenkins. It's slightly different with those two systems, but it's close enough, say 30-plus years of chaos. And I think they've already begun. I don't think that they're going to last another 30 years. I think if you look back over the last few years, you see the chaos pretty clearly. Economic chaos, financial chaos, people scrambling all over the world to keep the whole financial system from bottoming out and leaving everybody in the dust, sort of, you know, looking for wheelbarrows to push so that they can get enough money together to buy a loaf of bread the way they did in the 30s in Germany. So we've managed, thanks to some very hard choices that President Obama had to make, to keep from being in a Great Depression. And the way we did it was through a whole lot of money at saving the banks and stuff, which all failed before the Great Depression, you see. And that was what made it so bad. There was no way to get better for quite a while there. So as far as I'm concerned, Obama made all the right choices there to keep us from bottoming out at a place where we wouldn't have had 10% unemployment, we would have had 25% or 30% unemployment, as they did during the Great Depression. However, I see it extending into the future some years. I don't know how long, but certainly a few. I don't think we've gone through the 35 or 37 years of chaos yet. I think we still have some to go. So it's not at all surprising that the astrological signs would bear this out. It is a time when we need those of us who are out of the matrix, who have awakened, know that there's more to life than we see around us every day. This is the time for those of us who see that to be especially calm and serene and positive in our attitude and encouraging to other people when they indicate fear to us, because the greatest blessings come to those who are fearless and who simply and humbly fill their position, do what it is that they feel that they should do, act lovingly to those around them, and not be attached to the outcome of anything except, well, I have enough food for today. I'm covered for today. Thank you, Lord. And just dwell in the realms of thanksgiving and praise and joy as much as possible, because these choices make a great big difference in how you experience life. You know, it's your little creation. We each of us have an inner creation, and we are the lords of that creation. And so when we forgive, that person we forgive is forgiven, and when we do not forgive, the person we do not forgive remains unforgiven. And we have the power to make choices like this. So I think that as things continue to be chaotic for a while, it behooves all of us to be especially careful to focus on serenity and peace of mind and the knowledge that all is truly well. And, of course, all is truly well. I mean, I've been in states many times where I have seen that although things look quite difficult to the outer eye, that somehow everything is perfect and is the way it needs to be for everything to happen harmoniously in the outworking of our days. And I've been in this mystical state so many times throughout my life that I subjectively, genuinely believe that everything is okay. And I'm a person that often has physical trauma. I'm looking at an operation now. I just had an operation in March, and both of those are, you know, operations on the spine to stabilize my spine. And so they're, you know, big hairy operations, and they take a lot of time to recover from. But you see, from my point of view, all of those times of life have their benefits as well. So you thank the Creator for everything that happens to you, including Mercury going retrograde and the financials looking a little shaky. And you simply deal with today the best you can, and let today be today, and let tomorrow be tomorrow, and you do not worry. Now, the other thing that I see here is a dependence upon a system of divination, in this case, astrology. Now, I have no argument with the simple fact that astrology is a strong predictor of the geography of one's life. I think that should be a given. Anybody that investigates astrology realizes that there is a tremendous amount of predictive power in the ratios between the heavenly bodies that appear in our skies at any particular time. As the heavens revolve, as the planets revolve, as the galaxy revolves around the rest of the galaxy, all of these ratios change, all these mathematical ratios change. And they have an effect upon the geography of our lives. In other words, instead of walking into a pleasant clearing that butterflies are flying around and there's a frog on the lily pad going croak, croak, you walk into the same place and there's a forest fire taking over. Okay, well, you understand from the astrology that there's a forest fire. You avoid the forest fire. You get away from the forest fire so you don't get burned. But you don't succumb to fear. You stay fearless and self-confident, and you figure out how to cooperate with what's happening in the best possible way, in the most loving way, in the wisest way, in the most calm and peaceful way, not becoming overly upset by anything, but reacting and responding appropriately to the catalyst. I remember one time Don asked those of Ra, I suppose, you know, talking about unconditional love being so important and everything, If I saw a bull rushing towards me, then my reaction would be to love the bull. And the Ra said, well, no, not exactly. Your reaction would be to put a fence between yourself and the bull and then to love the bull. So you do want to, you know, avoid forest fires, avoid bulls, but you don't want to stop loving. You don't want to stop feeling fearless. Above all, I think it's really helpful for people, especially people that know a lot about one of the predictive systems, the Tarot, astrology, or any of the good predictive systems like numerology, reading the hands, reading the face. There are so many different ways you can get predictive information from various parts of your environment. The more you know, the more important it is to realize that you did not come here to save the world. You came here to love it. So when you see, oh, Mercury's going retrograde, you love this world. You love your life. You love the Creator. You love the people around you. And you bathe yourself and all those around you in that wonderful stream of love that's from the Creator. Of course, you can't do it yourself. If you tried to love on your own human abilities, you'd run out really fast. But fortunately, we're just flowing at all times with an infinite supply of love light from the Creator. And the Creator truly does love us all very, very dearly and is just breathless with anticipation to see what we're going to learn next that will tell that Creator about itself. And so, you know, stay within the boundaries of sanity. Respond appropriately to forest fires and bulls. But for the most part, find every way possible to shake off all fear and to live in fearlessness, joy, thankfulness, gratitude. And you will find that by the time you finish loving the people around you and letting them love you back, that even Mercury going retrograde is not so bad.
Okay, Carla, do you think that, well, how do you find the balance between looking for forest fires? In other words, before we go out for the day, we tend to check the weather and see if it's going to rain so that we know whether to take an umbrella or not. But how far do you take that? Do you continually look at whether whatever your divination system is, whether it's astrology or tarot or what, do you continually consult that on a daily basis? When does it become living in fear versus just checking the weather?
Well, I don't really know if there's a hard and fast rule on that, but I think you can look and see. I think it's okay to take a look, for instance, at the horoscope in the paper every day. This person is probably able to take a look at the tables and see in a much more specific way than just reading the paper and getting the horoscope what's going to happen for the day. And I think it's always okay to look at the news, look at the weather, look at the horoscope, look at whatever. Where you begin acting inappropriately is when you find fear being struck into you by what you see. I mean, it's one thing, say, to look at a weather report and realize there are 16 inches of snow predicted and think, I'd better get some water in the house. I'd better get a little food in the house. I'd better get some batteries for my flashlights, oil for my lamp, wood for the stove, whatever it is that you need to make sure that you're going to be okay with the power out and you know, with it being cold outside and so forth. If you move beyond that and you are fearful about it, then you've gone too far. So I think that you need to gauge in your reaction whether or not it has struck fear in your hearts. If it has struck fear within you to find out that it's going to snow, then it's probably an indication that you have some inner work to do in order to recover your sense of fearlessness. There's nothing to fear. It's just a little snow, so you can't get out, so you can't use your computer because the power's off. Well, hunker down in front of the fire and have a little cider, you know, and enjoy the quiet of the snow. enjoy the positive aspects of it being a snow day. So I would say if a person is looking at the horoscope and then worrying about it, then there's an unhealthy reliance on that. If a person looks at that and goes, wow, that's challenging, isn't it? Let's see, is there anything I can do that is going to help me avoid the charging bull aspects of this moment, and you realize, no, there's not a thing I can do, then you need at that point to release all fear and remember how powerful that you are to create your own environment. It's really, really important to realize that we are people given freedom of choice. We often do not have the ability to choose what happens to us. We can't stop the snow from falling. We can't stop Mercury from going retrograde. But we can stop our hearts from quailing. We can refuse to fear what's happening. And we can open our hearts and ask ourselves where the love is in the moment. And if we don't see much love in the moment, then we realize it's up to us. It's time for us to step up to the plate and inject some love into the situation. And the way you really inject love into the situation in general of it being Mercury going retrograde or things looking badly in the economy or whatever, is to cultivate fearlessness and peace of mind so that when people come to you and they are fearful and wondering what to do, that you can comfort them, reassure them, and encourage them to move from love instead of from fear. You can't love and fear at the same time. One or the other is going to win. And there isn't any question in most people's minds as to which energy they would prefer to run. So really, what is there to fear? I think that philosophically speaking, we need to face the fact that you live until you die. And death comes all too soon for all of us. We have only a few heartbeats between now and the time that we drop this body and move into larger life. So I always have loved the quote from St. Paul's Corinthians. Is it Corinthians? I think it's Romans. Excuse me. It's the book of Romans, where he says, if I live in Christ. If I die in Christ. So whether I live or whether I die, I am in Christ, and Christ is in me. Now, people that aren't Christian can't really vibe into that. But if you substitute love for Christ, if I live in love. If I die in love. So whether I live or die, I am with love and love is with me. We are at base unconditional love. That is our nature. That is our heritage and that is our destiny. So we have the power of our convictions. And if our conviction is that there is truly nothing to fear and truly all is well, then we are going to be able to be a resource for the people around us who might not have thought this through yet. And that will help. That will just help so much, not just ourselves, you see. We're part of the human tribe, and we need to help each other to make it through this Mercury being retrograde or whatever. And we help each other by being fearless, by being radiant, and by letting that love flow through us and out back to the Creator and out to every human being in our tribe that with whom we come in contact.
Carla, we have literally just a couple of minutes left, so I have a very quick follow-up question to that, and if it's too long, we can just save it for another day. But I was just thinking, you know, as one who tends to get too busy to even think about checking astrology or the weather, do you think ignorance is bliss, or do you think that, if someone isn't so inclined to be checking some sort of divination tool, that that that's fine to just live life day to day, or do you think that's kind of a personal thing and some people feel guided to check those things and others don't?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of personality completely. I never check anything. My husband checks the weather every single day, sometimes two or three times a day, because his work is dependent on how the weather is doing. He's a gardener, so whether he mows or not, whether he gets leaves up or not, whether he's able to do this or that chore, depends completely on whether the weather will let him do that. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. And when it's marginal, he checks. He checks and checks again. I don't check anything, but I've counseled many people who had wanted to know what was going on in the world, wanted to know, and they find out, and the more they find out, the more horrified they become, and all of a sudden they're going, what do I do? And it's like, you're not here to save the world. You're here to love the world. So learn all that you want, but just remember that at the end of all of this exploration that you're doing, you know, turn off the alternative news, forget about anything except the fact that you're here to love this place and to lift the vibrations of Earth so that Earth will have less problem when this winter solstice of 2012 comes and it makes the transition to fourth density. You're helping out the Earth itself. You're helping out the people of Earth. It's important how you behave, how you feel, and how you act, because it's not just yourself you're dealing with. When you lighten the consciousness within yourself, you lighten the consciousness of planet Earth, and that's always worthwhile to do.
Okay, we are nearly out of time. Did you have any quick announcements, Carla, or will that pretty much wrap it up for today?
That pretty much wraps it up for me. I'm glad that we're going to be with everybody on New Year's Eve, and we do apologize for not making it on Christmas Eve, but Monica and I both have family that is going to swallow us whole at that point, and it would be a real challenge to break away and have an hour with you. But I promise all of you who will miss us on Christmas Eve that we will be thinking of you and wishing that we were with you instead of with Aunt Flo or whoever trying to be polite about her really ugly hat. Ah, such a family.
And don't forget, we will be here next Friday, December 17th. We still have one more week before Christmas. So thank you, everyone, for listening. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Liao. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And be sure and visit our sponsor, waternurtureslife.com, our very dear Alan Feibelman, our member of Bring Forth community, for information regarding high vibration water, the missing piece for radiant health for wanderers and humans alike, and a good way to help make the transition a little smoother. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums, bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions, or submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Have a great week. We will see you next Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern.